our special guest this hour, of course. If it's Tuesday, it's Stan Deo's time. I just want to touch on the previous guest, Hugh Clark. If you didn't listen to that interview, I would urge everyone to listen to the interview. You know, I feel, some days I feel like I've got the best job in the world. It's not really a job, but some days I feel so lucky, to be able to speak with people like Mr. Clark. The history, and I'm not kidding, I remember watching the funeral procession, and I remember, with my parents as a child, it's almost as if I knew Mr. Clark in a way. Believe me, and I say that respectfully, he is an African American, and at the time, you know, to see an African American on that, carrying the body of the president, it was remarkable. And seriously, the word remarkable fits here. But the history that is contained in the book Betrayal, it's an amazing book. I'm not quite done with it yet. This is one of those times when I didn't get finished with it, but I'm just intrigued by all of the information. I'm not, don't want to take any time away from Stan Deo, but before we get to Stan Deo, let me ask you, guys, are you looking for that perfect business gift? The perfect business gift right now has been made simple by Omaha Steaks. It's great to give too. Send it to yourself, man. I'm telling you, the perfect business gift is simple. It's simple to give and a joy to get. That's exactly what Omaha Steaks business gifts deliver. Did you know they have a whole section for this business gifts? It's amazing. They've got a huge variety from premium steaks to skillet meals, flexible gift plans for big and small businesses, personalized one-on-one service. They handle the delivery. This is great. Because of the business we're in, sometimes you have to say that special thank you. And we do it with Omaha Steaks. And we do it very well. It's amazing how many people will call us and say, thanks, boy. What a fantastic idea. The gourmet food gifts appeal to everyone. We've never had anyone say, it's always been thank you. Gifts offer the unique home cooking experience. This is from a trusted brand known for quality, and quality indeed. Folks, right now, you can experience for yourself what makes these business gifts so unique with an exclusive offer. Listen to this. Order the perfect business gift to try Omaha Steaks gift experience for yourself, or send it as a gift. Either way, it's the perfect business gift, and it includes, now listen to this, 4 5-ounce bacon-wrapped tri-tip steaks. Oh, they are delicious. And 4 4-ounce Omaha Steak burgers, 4 3-ounce gourmet franks, 2 4-ounce boneless pork chops, 4 3-ounce kielbasa sausages, plus free shipping, and 4 4-ounce caramel apple tartlets. Just for our listeners, and this is so important right now, this exclusive package is only $59.99. Folks, go to omahasteaks.com, type HH in the search bar, and choose the perfect business gift. Again, visit omahasteaks.com, enter the code HH in the search bar to send or experience for yourself that exclusive gift package for only $59.99. You can't beat this deal at all. That's omahasteaks.com and HH in the search bar. With that, I just want to say welcome, Stan Deo. Stan, thank you so much for joining us again this Tuesday. We made it through another week, didn't we?
Boy, we did. And for us, we're dry. The rest of the country down south seems to be in strife, doesn't it?
You know, it seems like you were talking about the weather last week, and when we were looking at this, what's going on, man? I mean, obviously,
there's something strange going on. Of course, conspiracy wise, we could say, HARP control the weather by the Russians, Chinese. Certainly the Americans wouldn't be doing it themselves. But otherwise, we might look at the last 2 years of weather changes. And I'm not supporting Al Gore's global warming stuff by human activity, but I have said all along, changes in the sun and the output of what's called, you know, it's irradiation factor, irradiance factor, how much light in the various frequencies it puts out. This has been increasing in certain frequencies. Now, this has to have an effect on us as well as the other planets, but for us, how much that energy is absorbed as heat, and, you know, that generates a rather strange pattern in our climate. It's changing the climate at the moment. For the last 2 years, our orchard and other people's orchard have been not flowering correctly. They've been hit last year with an early spring and then a frost, and then it killed the buds, the blossoms, you know, and then you didn't have very much crop this year. In fact, last year also there was a lot of it in Colorado. They got sunburn. I forget the actual term of it, but it's, the sun comes up and it's hot on the south side of the trees, and it caused the bark to burst and split around the trunk and kill the tree. And we lost five or six of our trees out of the orchard the same way. But things are changing this year. I mean, it doesn't take me to tell you. Extended summer, crazy spring. I mean, none of the trees out there, I'll take it back, two or three of them did blossom out. But the majority of them, you know, peach and the apples and things, were just stunted, if any growth at all, and any blossoms. So this year, the seasonal change is all skew-whiff. Now, it remains to be seen what happens between now and December as far as global weather. But this is a sign to me that there are great changes coming in the climate, which I've predicted now for 10 years, as the solar changes intensify, that the heat engine that makes hurricanes, that makes tornadoes and things like that, is going to intensify. And by intensify, I mean it's going to concentrate in certain areas more than others than it used to. Florida, for instance, has another one or two hurricanes that may come its way and intensify. They're out in the Atlantic at the moment. But then in South America, I've been witnessing something that's not hitting mainstream news, because we're getting like iPhone captures, video captures, and stills of Uruguay at a port there, and in Brazil, and a couple other places on the east coast of South America, where they thought a tidal wave was coming because all of the seawater just receded out to sea, way out. And they were showing, I mean, people were walking on seabed there that was, you'd think that there was a tidal wave coming because it all retreated. Boats sank down into the sand because they could no longer be floated up to the dock. And then on the west coast of South America, they're getting larger, higher tides than normal, and a lot of, you know, rainstorms and severe storms coming inland, pushing the tidal waters into the shore. It's almost like someone has magically tipped up the right side of South America and dipped the left side down so that, you know, water recedes on the right side and rises on the left side. I know that's crazy, but the only other thing I could think of was that the earth sped up a bit, you know, and I'm sure we would have noticed the length of day changing. So there's something weird going on that I can't put my finger on that's causing these global weather anomalies. And it's part of, you know, what may be a steady state for the next 10 or 15 years.
Stan, if I can just ask you one question, and this is the first year I really, maybe it's the first time I've paid attention to it, I don't know, but it almost seems like, okay, this is August 29th, 2017. It almost seems like we're a month ahead. It almost seems like we're in September. We're having September weather, and it seemed to be that way the entire year.
Yeah, and where we live, Stan, you know, in the summer here, especially in August, usually August and then through the first few weeks of September, it's hot. It's humid. It's in the, you know, mid 80s. But what'd you say, maybe Friday or Saturday?
It got
last week,
the 50s.
Yeah, you know, the high temperature, we're talking, you know, low 70s, lows in the low 50s.
Yeah.
And you can feel the change. It's almost like the onset of fall is here, and
exactly.
We are still in August.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here in the last, say, week, 10 days, we monitor our stuff with an outdoor weather station here and record it in the computer. We've had 6 out of 13, 14 days, 6 of those have been above 90.
Wow.
So it's still warmish. I mean, we're still running air conditioner day and night here. On some of the hottest days, around the 19th of this month, we noticed peak winds up around 25 miles an hour here. So for us, it's summertime hanging on rather than going into fall. Well, take that back. We got one or two trees that are starting to produce yellow leaves now, but not full fall foliage yet. So in contrast to what you're getting, we're still getting the heat.
And Stan, I found this video of what you just talked about in South America. And the receding, the water were, okay, on the one side of South America, the water receded, like you said, and it's crazy. They show, basically what looks like the bottom of a lake, an emptied out lake, and, boats just sitting on no water around. And then on the other side here, and I'm just starting to see this video of the massive waves on the one side. Do you think this has anything to do with the weather system and with Harvey and or weather wars? I've been reading a lot of speculation that people believe that Harvey, there's some sort of weather manipulation that was used with Harvey, and maybe that has something to do with what's going on. And I can't wrap my head around how this would work with the water.
It is possible. Since 1975, both the United States and Russia have had agreements about not using certain things in weather warfare. And some of the weather warfare wasn't high-tech back then. It was simply a matter of the Russians spreading coal dust over the Siberian snowfields to cause an early melt and temperature changes, which would affect weather over the northwest of the United States. And I don't know what we've done in return, but certainly HARP, I think, can have an effect on ionosphere conditions, which also affect, believe it or not, the charges inside the Earth, what's called telluric or Earth currents, that move thunderstorms. And by manipulating the conductivity of the upper ionosphere into pathways, it is possible to steer thunderstorms and hence tornadoes and hurricanes. Now, it takes a lot of energy to do that and a bit of planning, but if you have the United States, say, doing it, and you have China doing it, and you have Russia doing it, unless they're all getting together and coordinating, their efforts are going to be unpredictable because they're going to be interacting with each other. And so Lord only knows what that's going to produce and where it's going to manifest. Now, that may be something to do with it. I don't know. The only other thing I could think of, as I said, was a change in the rotational speed of the planet, slow change in the going in the westerly direction, and perhaps the beginning of a serious expansion phase of the planet, where we're getting all these sinkholes. I don't know. I just got to confess, this has got me puzzled, and I'm trying to figure out an answer to that in a lot of different directions.
Yeah, apparently this, they say August 11th, the beaches mysteriously went dry in Brazil and Uruguay, and as you said, pointed out, they thought that it was a tsunami, but they go on to say that the water had receded further than anyone had ever seen, and people who live there their whole life said they'd never seen anything like this happen. And there's lots of speculation as to what could be upcoming, what could be the cause of this. Is it an earthquake yet to be seen? Is it something like you said, Stan, where the Earth changed the speed of the rotation or the axis that it spins on?
Expansion.
That's something pretty crazy.
I know. Holly's got it. It's the last story on our webpage on the lower left about the. You can click on the articles yourself, folks, and have a look. It shows boats sitting on the semi-wet sea bottom as they sank down. But at this point, I think all we can do is suggest possibilities and start looking for facts that fit the pattern. The fact that we had a high pressure area come in from the western side of the state and block and sit in one place and block that hurricane so it couldn't traverse. I mean, it locked it in over Houston. And the fact that that hit our major energy production down there in the United States, it just kind of speaks of something orchestrated. I have to feel that. I don't know what it's going to do long term for our oil prices, but I suspect they're going to be up for a while. And the fact that Saudi Arabia has been sitting on oil production and a number of the other oil-producing Middle East countries have been putting a lid on it, and there's not a glut of oil, and then suddenly our major production, refineries and stuff get hit, and the Saudis can now release their that happen, and that would then pour money into their coffers because of a, you know, a an act of God that destroyed, you know, or at least damaged severely our oil production. There's just a lot of things that don't feel right about this.
Yeah, there's definitely some cause for concern, and you know, the amount the rainfall totals in Houston and the surrounding areas are incredible. I think it was up to 52 inches is what they said today.
When you measure rainfall in feet, that's astounding. I mean, in Texas, give me a break, you know, that's just huge.
That's more rain than they average in a year's time that they've received just since last Friday. And the levees and the reservoirs and rivers are set to peak in still another 48 hours, so the flooding threat is far from over, even though the rain seems to be moving out tonight.
Yeah, and the other thing is that hopefully that this rain will move on and stop, because they're pushing one of the dams close to Bay City, which has a nuclear power plant there for Texas, pushing to the point where if it does overflow, it could flood in the area of the nuclear reactor, which would be potentially catastrophic. Mm-hmm. Don't need to spell that out for you except to say Fukushima.
Yeah, well, we were looking at the, we were talking about this on the Daily Show, on the geography of the reservoirs and the dams, and if they were to fail or break, what would that look like? And we got into a little bit of the history of these reservoirs, and they were built, I believe, in 1908, and there was no community around them. It was to hold the water for the community, which was to the east, about 15 miles. Well, now Houston
right.
is the fourth largest city in the country, and it's very densely populated, and they have built, you know, massive subdivisions, houses, neighborhoods, and communities all throughout, right up into the sides of those reservoirs. So
yeah.
when they designed these things to hold the water back, all these communities were not there. Now they are there. So if they do fail, it would be catastrophic, not only in the sense of the nuclear plant that you're talking about, but also the number of people that would be affected if that did happen.
Well, you know, I made a joke to Holly the other day about, well, we can call that area Lake Houston now, but there really is a Lake Houston suburb there, quite a wealthy suburb, very nice homes and golf courses. And I was just watching on the news just before we went on air earlier today, they were filming people trying to get out of there on boats because the water level was now encroaching up to just the bottom of the second floor levels of these beautiful homes. You know, the golf course was, of course, just part of the lake that's now formed there in quote unquote Lake Houston. It's going to be years getting over this. It's not just Houston's problem; it's America's problem. Boy, the people are you going to that have left and been evacuated, have gone up into Austin, have gone up into San Antonio. I was talking to people in San Antonio that run our server. And they said, well, pray for us here, too, because we're getting an influx of people, too, that are trying to, you know, find a place to settle down until they can go home. Fortunately, FEMA and President Trump have been on top of this. I can't believe that the fake news that are trying to paint him as a cold, heartless, you know, leader of sorts down there. When, you know, you can see it on the news clips live where he's consoling people, giving them a hug and saying, you know, encouraging the first responders. Gosh, they've turned it into a political thing when this is a real problem to every person in the United States.
You know, we talk about humanitarian crises. This is certainly a humanitarian crisis and of just unbelievable proportions. The and also what, you know, the water, what I don't want to say toxins, but like, I guess they would be toxins.
There's a particular kind of bacteria in there that, if it gets in a cut or you ingest it, can be fatal. It's really bad, and it's going to be throughout the water.
Is that the flesh-eating bacteria stuff that we've been seeing after?
No, I think it had a different, like a one-letter name, you know, the something bacteria. But they said that people walking around in it may contract it, and some may be symptomatic and some may not be. But because that water is going through sewers and stuff and pumping it out, I'd say that you have a cocktail of sickness there. And it's going to be there for some time, because even when the rain stops and the flooding finally slows down, the areas that have straight pathways to the gutters that and go out to the sea, they're going to drain, but they're going to be pockets, you know, low-lying dips all through the area there around Houston that will hold water like a pond for weeks until it can evaporate. And there's a lot of clay there that holds it in. So we're just going to see this stuff. It's going to take months to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if T.C. Joseph said this publicly or not yesterday or today when we were talking. Have we done anything to Israel recently? And I ask that question with all seriousness, given...
Well, as far as I know, they have Kushner's thing have been trying to get Egypt and Israel and the rest of them all together to form a Middle East peace treaty. I guess in other days and times and people in control, that might be a great idea, but it's so close to the biblical prophecy that it's going to put the finger on somebody, who ratifies it. And I guess, personally, I wouldn't like to be involved in that effort to try to make a peace treaty that the Palestinians say will only work if there is, a two-party solution, a two-state solution.
Right.
But maybe we're getting a warning. We better darn well pay attention. You know, I can't remember the guy's name, but there's this Indian Christian guy that wears kind of light orange robes, and a lady sent me something about it here the other day. And I watched the video that he gave back in, at least 3-4 years back. He was visiting Houston, and he was talking to a church down there, and he said, look, the Lord gave me a word about Houston that there's going to be a terrible flooding here and destruction. And he said he told me to warn the faithful to move north now to avoid what's coming. And then he went on to say something about... And, of course, that's happening now. Then he went on to say something about the next of three judgments that's going to occur. I think it was in California first. There might be one in Florida, but the California one was of interest because he says that there's going to be a great earthquake. And I think he said Costa Mesa, which is just south of L.A., I think it is. And that worried me a bit because that's close to two fault lines that have been rumbling a bit, one parallel to the San Andreas. And both of them, San Andreas and this other fault, go down to Mexico, to the their fault line, the Imperial fault line that comes up to meet the San Andreas. And there's a little river dip in or a lake in between those two that has been having small quakes underneath it. So and the USGS has given that area a 30-year warning, saying at the outside 30 years, the chances are about above 95% you're going to get a severe earthquake. And it could be tomorrow, but it could be 30 years. And when they come out and start telling you this kind of stuff and you see the signs in the earthquake patterns and the changes, in the weather, you got to wonder if the Lord's not putting his fist down on us and saying, okay, guys, pay attention. Here's warning number one. If you don't repent, and as a nation, pray for forgiveness and turn from what you're doing to Israel, I'm going to hit you again. And boy, we're not seeing that happen. We're not seeing the repentance across the country. So I don't know. I wouldn't like to live in Florida or California or on the East Coast.
Yeah, a lot going on for sure. And many folks they understand that this Houston flooding is one, once in a lifetime kind of storm, I guess what you'd call it. It's an historic catastrophic event, and we got to continue to pray that the worst is over. With the hurricane season,
I think the worst is just starting. Because, by the way, and Stan, I'm sure when it's all said and done, most people don't have insurance against flooding, especially.
Do you know how many people down there didn't have insurance? 80% of the homes.
80%, yeah.
And do you know that they're changing? I saw this today. I'm going to try to pull up the article. Insurance companies are changing some law on Friday that it's going to hurt people in Texas trying to file claims for the flooding. And I'm not sure exactly what was changed. I'm going to pull up the article right now and see if I can find it, but, it was pretty terrible to the way that it was Okay, yeah, here we go from yesterday. Texas set to impose new insurance restrictions as residents face damage from Harvey. As residents and businesses throughout Texas face devastating damage from Hurricane Harvey, many will be, and I gotta scroll down here, bear with me, many will be relying on their insurance providers to compensate them for their losses. But in a few days, it may be harder to get reimbursed if the insurance company doesn't follow through. On September 1st, a new law will take effect in Texas that aims to cut down on a recent rise in insurance lawsuits regarding weather-related damages. HB 1774, as the bill was known prior to becoming law, imposes a series of new regulations on lawsuits filed against insurance providers for nature-related events, including flooding, hurricane, tornado damage that residents are now facing in the wake of Hurricane Harvey.
Like the church lady would say, isn't that convenient?
Yeah.
Or no, isn't that special? I'm sorry. But
yeah, isn't that very special? Nice for some, Hollywood would say.
Yeah.
Nice for some.
But the 2 in 10 having, only having insurance is, I mean, when you look at the extent of the damage, it's amazing to think, and hopefully, like we've seen so far, we will have the communities that come together to help each other and help their, you know, fellow neighbors to get through this. And I'm sure that will extend for, you know, the weeks and the months beyond this after the media leaves. But it's going to be a, regardless of insurance money or not, it's going to be a huge endeavor.
Yeah. Can you imagine if you were in charge of trying to take care of the, during the catastrophe in the Houston area, and after, what the priority would be of what you fix first, with if you got enough money, but what things do you fix first? Is it communication? Is it law enforcement? Is it rescue? It's a nightmare. I sat down and tried to figure out what I would do, and I ended up thinking, I'm going to have a cup of coffee. This is too hard.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, surprisingly, maybe even ironically, Texas, the previous administration's government, the governor's, put together a rainy day fund, and I'm not joking, that's what it's called, for situations to offset damage or to offset damage from emergencies like this. So that's going to be rather interesting. I'm not sure if it's $10 million that they've got, which is a drop in the bucket compared to the, you know, what they're looking at in terms of damage. But you're right. I mean, how do you triage something like that?
It seemed like everything is so interdependent, you know, and in such chaos when you can't get from point A to point B, like injured people to hospitals, you know, or if you have to use a helicopter, you can't get them all. They're just a huge number of things to consider. And, you know, people have to just give everybody involved in the rescue and rebuilding effort kudos, you know, a hat tip, because they have got a horrific job ahead of them.
Amen. Amen to that. It's, yeah, go. Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I know. Are we at break time yet, or we got a minute?
We're going to bypass the break.
Okay. What's the deal with Pastor Joel Osteen? Some saying he closed the doors, but they weren't locked or something, and didn't send out people to help. Did you hear any more of that?
Yeah, today he opened the doors of his church and has been giving out supplies from food to clothing, blankets and whatnot, but he was taken to task for closing the doors of his Lakewood church as a shelter, and he caught so much flack on social media that he turned around and opened it up today, last night or today, I'm not sure which one.
Right. Well, that's...
So, and then they're in damage control right now. They're trying, you know, they, a number of news people went down there to interview, and, for what they're trying to pass it off, say, you know, Joel Osteen was always, you know, looking to help, but he was taking a considerable amount of heat Monday for not opening the doors of the 16,000 capacity Houston church to flooding victims. But now the news appears to have been concentrated to, instead of smearing Osteen, making it seem like he's been doing this all throughout the storm.
Well, where is that church located? Is it in the middle on high ground somewhere that would stay, you know, that would have been a good shelter?
Apparently it's dry, yeah. It's the Lakewood Church in Houston. I don't know where it is. Are you getting another call?
Okay. Okay, Holly said it was in Lakeland, and it flooded anyway. So, but then he's backtracking, but I don't think... yeah, she said he's already put mattresses. places in there for people. Oh, okay. Boy. That's kind of a bad witness. You know?
Yeah.
But it's, yeah.
Well, it was a big issue on Twitter, apparently, over the last few days, because he said he was not going to open the doors of his church, but then apparently maybe was guilted into doing it. I don't know.
I got to tell you something. Okay, if I had a building that was dry, period, I don't care if it could house 10 or 1,000 or 100 or 20. If I could help somebody, I'm going to do that. And mm-hmm. You know, there was a woman in a flooded neighborhood. She opened her garage to her neighbors who were flooded. My goodness, do something proactive.
Well, you know, he said that the Olstein denied that the doors are ever closed, and the church tweeted on Sunday that the Lakewood Church is inaccessible due to severe flooding. Well, I saw boats and helicopters and everything taking people to shelters. Why couldn't they take some there, regardless of the flooding? If it was up on high ground, that's it.
Yes, exactly.
It just doesn't sound truthful. But anyway, that's just me. Long distance.
But you know, all of this, everything that we're seeing today, isn't this indicative to me, over breakfast this morning with a guest and Joe and John, it just seemed like everything that we're witnessing right now just seems, I'll just use the term surreal, given all of the circumstances, given the political, social environment that we're experiencing. Certainly end times like.
Yeah. Now, there's something else, too, that's kind of, last 3 or 4 weeks that we've been seeing, you know, that the American Navy has had 4 ships that have had, either a collision run aground or, collision with another ship and lost lives. And, you know, one accident like that, you could say, well, gee, that was unfortunate. It must have been fog or something, but it wasn't. And I've been trying to figure out, going back through the news, to figure out what could have done this. And if there were a way to hack the navigation systems of these ships, then they could be dead in the water while some other craft or boat was shoved into them. Maybe its navigation system was hacked as well. But it could also be that these tankers, the big ships that have hit our naval craft, were controlled by somebody sympathetic to the cause who couldn't change course, allegedly, in time, and the American ship didn't get out of the way. Now, what would cause that? Well, on the show images page, images 43 through 45 and image 40 are looking at devices that we have, that the Chinese have, and the North Koreans have access to that shoot microwaves at a target. A drone can do it. A missile can do it, and an aircraft can do it. You aim it at a ship, you aim it at a building, and you shoot these concentrated microwaves at the building, and it zaps all the electronics in it. It's targeted, EMP is what it amounts to. But it's microwaves, and that is the same result as an EMP in that it goes in there and shorts out the equipment, and probably isn't the best for the occupants of the building either. But anyway, the electricity is compromised by that. You can see that Boeing and Phantom Works and the United States Air Force all got together and tested these missiles, these microwave missiles, by firing at target buildings that they had out in the test range. But that's what they're telling you now. We've had them in the back room, must have had for some time. The Russians, they have claimed they have technology that will disable naval destroyers, maybe, black out entire cities. When Holly and I were on the Kitty Hawk as guests there, aircraft carrier before it was decommissioned, they showed us that they could take one of their planes, a special kind of plane on board, a turboprop thing. They could get airborne, and they could be offshore of a major city, and they could block all radio communications, TV, and everything for that whole city from that one plane. Now, that was in the old days. This will not only block it, but take it down so it takes weeks or months to build it back up again. And since these Navy craft that were damaged were over in the Western Pacific and some close to the Korean waters, you got to wonder if the Chinese have helped the North Koreans by a little bit of skullduggery. I just think that it's just too coincidental.
Yeah. very much so. Stan, and I, while you were going through that, I just found a story on True News, which really is no fan of Joel Osteen.
Right.
And I found an interesting story here on True News. Soros-funded groups fueled Joel Osteen's church story. And what this article goes out on to say, basically, is that Joel Osteen was taking considerable heat Monday for not opening his doors of the 16,000-capacity church in Houston. The story appears to have been concocted by members of a George Soros-backed group for simply trying to smear Osteen and the Lakewood Church. They go through a timeline of events.
Really?
They say prior to the arrival of the hurricane, Houston storm officials set up a network of shelters. Lakewood Church was not selected to house evacuees. Some point early in the storm event, a member of Indivisible USA, a group funded almost exclusively by Soros, posted photos of Lakewood Church on social media claiming the church was closed. The story went viral. In the meantime, the full brunt of Harvey unleashed upon Houston, Lakewood begins to experience flooding of its own in lower levels. Some employees of the church had to be evacuated themselves. Then it says It says Occupy Democrats, another Soros-funded left-leaning group, says that the story is about the Lakewood Church is faked, and the photos by the Indivisible member were picked up by the liberal mainstream media and began publishing their own news articles on the event with their own spin. And the article ends by saying, here are the facts. Like nearly every other church in Houston, Lakewood Church did cancel services Sunday. Church doors were never locked, and the few people who did come to the church seeking help were all provided assistance.
So, well, that makes sense, doesn't it? Try to bring down the Christian faith because of that.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Interesting.
And, you know, and look, I'm not a fan of Joel Osteen, but I'm also, I just, look, you know, all we want is the truth. And if this was some crap that was manufactured by these revolutionary communist groups, these Soros-backed frauds and thugs, then they should be called out. And I'm angry about that.
I mean, if people want to be critical of Joel Osteen, there's plenty they can pick up on and do that, but don't start manufacturing and making them false stories to make people look bad.
That's right.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Well, for Soros Group to fund those things, those activities, it does make sense, because he hates American Americans and he hates Christianity and Judaism, for that matter.
Stan, if let me ask you something. I really haven't looked into this. I don't know if Soros is walking around the United States. If he's in the United States, why in the hell don't we have why hasn't he been indicted by the Justice Department?
Well, I don't know. Maybe he's doing what the global planners want. I mean, if I were a global planner trying to get the nations of the world to kowtow into a one-world government, I would think that the American public, you know, as independent as we are and have been for a couple hundred years, would probably be a thorn in the side of a new world order, because, you know, in the beginning of, or toward the last 30 years of last century there, you know, in the 1970s to 2000, we were still Americans. We were still proud to be Americans, and, you know, America was on top. And now, of course, they're trying to drive us into the ground because they don't want the resistance that we would offer. They want our technology. They want our money, our assets, but they don't want us. We're a thorn in their side. So I can see how, if Soros isn't part of the elite planners of this global world government, you know, the world government, then he is certainly being used by them.
Yeah, no, and he, for whatever reason, whether it's true or not, he seems to be the point of focus and or money backing for a lot of these groups, or at least as the face of that. And I'm sure there are many other satanic global elitists that are funding these organizations and these people as well, but he just, for whatever reason, is the face of this. And there are other countries have warrants for his arrest for war crimes. And it's a shame that, you know, these people are able to get away with what they are able to, and he is the, you know, basically the only one that takes the blame, and he's everybody's favorite punching bag, well deserved. But we know there are a network of other people just like him out there that are operating without that exposure.
Yeah. He's the architect of chaos wherever he goes. whatever country he says he sides on. He puts division into it and brings it apart.
And that's his intent here in the United States, obviously. And we have to, you know, I played some clips on my morning show this morning, perhaps too many, but Keith Olbermann, Resistance. You know, my goodness. You talk about
unhinged.
Unhinged, indeed.
That's the favorite word they like to use to talk about Trump. You know, yeah. He's unhinged. But Keith Olbermann, I mean, that guy he's rapid.
Well, and to my surprise, I had kind of taken a poll, and not too many people heard his program, his YouTube, or his videos, I should say. Not YouTube, but which, by the way, I believe are monetized, you know. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. So to listen to his, to the vile, vicious, venomous, words, it's beyond comprehension, to some people. So anyway, yeah.
Yeah,
so Stan,
I
didn't mean to dominate, brother.
No, that's all right. So, while we're on, you know, quote unquote natural events or catastrophes, slide 37 on my show images page, massive volcanic engine has just been found hiding under Washington State. And if you click on that picture, you'll get the zoom of the picture. You can see what the article talks about. They found this huge magma engine, like a, I don't know how many times the size of the Yellowstone it might be, but it connects Mount St. Helens, Mount Rainier, Mount Adams, all kind of to the east and south of Tacoma, but right close. And you can see in the Mount St. Helens, you can see the little grooves in the terrain map running up to that, showing where the magma has flowed before and rivers have formed. But and if you go back to the text there, massive volcanic engine, and click on the text, it takes you to the article. And it's a good read. It tells you the size of the whole group of these magma chambers you see there, but they seem to connect. They don't know exactly how, but they do connect underneath. And they think it's at least 13,000 cubic kilometers, which would be about 3,000 cubic miles, with a volume of 2.6 times Lake Michigan of magma sitting underneath that area. So if we get some severe earthquakes and shaking from, you know, the Wanda Fuca plate offshore and from the Cascadia subduction zone, there's a lot of stuff to play with there that could come to the surface, and, you know, either in the form of volcanoes or magma flows or both. It's something to keep an eye on. Certainly not a good thing for real estate salesmen in the area, I'm sure.
No, probably not.
Okay. Now, you remember, gosh, what was it, probably a month and a half ago, I talked to you about a particular asteroid that was going to come in close to the Earth's surface, and
yes.
NASA was going to, you know, try to deflect it with a little test unit.
Yeah.
It's got.
We talked about this last week because we weren't sure, you know, if they tried to nudge it, you know, what was the likelihood that it could nudge it into Earth.
Yeah, well, it's not the one that's coming, you know, this month. It's on October the 12th. It's ahead of us a bit. So there's an article there that tells, you know, that their Planetary Defense Coordination Office at NASA is doing this, and it's expected to get no closer than 4,200 miles. But, you know, that's out there in the outermost orbit of some of our geostationary satellites and communication. So anyway, click that article, put it away in your email folder or something, and wait until October 12th. If we're still here, you'll see what happens. I mean, I don't know why they had to test it so close to the Earth. You know, in my opinion, they should have tested something like that further out. Like with this, the one in image 47, the 2.7 mile asteroid that will be like 4 million miles from Earth, you know, like 13 times the distance of the moon from the Earth. And they get all excited about that and tell you this is coming. You'll be able to see it with your telescopes. You know, wow. But it's not as close as this one coming out over the 12th. And I think that I don't think they'll be able to move Florence. That's the one coming shortly.
Wait a minute. Just to be clear, the one on October 12th, is that the one that they're going to attempt to nudge?
Not this big one. I mean, this Florence is big.
What could possibly go wrong?
We'd have another airburst over some major city like that happened over Russia recently. I know we have to do this. We have to figure out a way to deflect these things, especially if they come in close and are undetected and are small, relatively small, hundreds of feet rather than miles. The one that is coming now is so far out that we won't see it again until probably 2030 or 2040, something down the line. That one, if it were to hit the Earth, would certainly hurt. It takes one about 12 miles in diameter, traveling at the normal speed of these things, to push a continent like India up into China to form the Himalaya Mountains and cause the global flood of the Bible. So this is about one-fourth of that size in diameter, but it would be less in volume. But still, it would probably make nuclear winter and hurt a lot for the planet.
Okay.
So keep an eye on that one. These are the two asteroids to watch. And another article, which was fun, was the scientists that have been studying Uranus and Neptune.
Yeah, I just read this.
Yeah, isn't that cool? They think that the pressure in those two systems and the constitution of the atmosphere means that it will make diamonds, and it will be raining diamonds instead of rain on these planets. I mean, it might be doing it right now for all we know, but I looked at it as carbon, oxygen, hydrogen. Okay, they're making these huge pressures form a crystalline substance, which is diamond. I just thought that was amazing. Oh, look, I'm going to run over to Uranus and go into a diamond store and collect a bit of stuff,
I don't want a diamond.
I wish I could make it rain diamonds in my house.
Holly says you got to say Uranus, because nobody wants a diamond from Uranus. I'll pay that. That's good.
Stan, how do
you? I had to keep my mic off. You know that, folks, right? Okay. Go ahead.
What do we? What are some household ways I can make diamonds in the comfort of my own home?
Yeah.
Is that possible?
There have been discussions about this using electric charge and forcing the electrons to reach a certain velocity, or ions in this case of the carbon. The best they've been able to do, I think, so far is make very, very, very microscopic diamonds by increasing pressures in various labs with techniques. But at home, you're more likely to be able to grow emeralds and softer crystals, not quartz, that don't require the compression that diamond does. I'm pretty certain from what studies have been made in the kimberlite pipes of South African dimes, mines, is that they are reaching down into the craton that supports like South America and the United States. Each one of them has a pedestal, like a column they sit on, a pillar. And it's heavily compressed, and there is reasonable thought that the deeper down you go, like with the kimberlite mines in South Africa, you'll find bigger diamonds because the pressure increases. So if we just mine further down, we'll be able to get a lot of big diamonds, and of course they'd kill the diamond market. And for sure, if we have space travel to Uranus and Neptune, they could harvest a lot of these, which would be probably smaller industrial diamonds, but still it might impact the value of diamonds when you find that they're just as common as rain, except on those two planets.
That's pretty interesting, to say the least. I wonder, we really don't know much about outside of our solar system, but you have to understand some of these other, how big our universe is. It's incomprehensible. I wonder what other planets and ecosystems of their own kind, what we see on other unknown planets. I bet there's endless possibilities out there. I bet there might even literally be a planet that rains cats and dogs. We have one that's raining diamonds. Who knows what's out there?
I hear you. Discovery. Yeah, I know. That's the great joy of the exploration of the unknown. Holly said she'd prefer to live on a planet and stay there, but of course I'd like to travel, get out there and see it all.
Yeah. How long until we get our, spaceships, light speed spaceships, where we can, go tour the universe?
Well, I've written about this a number of times. In fact, I've started putting some educational, very short video clips, a minute or two, on my YouTube channel about experiments with water to show how you can create a warp field ahead of a craft in the water, in the air, and in the future in space itself, which is not a vacuum. It's really a very fine sea, a fine structure sea called the ether sea, or they call it black dark matter or dark energy. But it behaves like a fluid, a very dense fluid. And the secret is that you can produce whatever propulsion you're using. You can use propulsion that doesn't go out the back end of your craft and push you forward. That's called symmetric propulsion, where you have equal and opposite reaction to the thrust. But this is called asymmetric, one-directional thrust, and you follow the thrust. And that means if you can push out this extremely high-speed stream of whatever you're using to push the craft, do it ahead of the craft so that it curls, hits space at high speed, and bounces off space because it's traveling so fast. It's called an inertial wall. It bends around into your intakes and recirculates like a smoke ring surrounding the craft. And it's surrounding the front part, and in some cases you'd want it to surround the back part as well. But the front part reaches out way ahead of where you're going and creates a low pressure area in space that you're pulled into. And it forms a wall of inertia from your speed, and the faster you go, the heavier and stronger that wall is. And you can equate that to Star Trek's shield. So they say, shields up so they can't shoot us. In this case, if you were traveling from here to somewhere else, even within our solar system, and you're traveling at high speeds like this, it would bounce rocks and debris and small stuff that would normally just put a hole in your craft. It'll bounce it around you and out to the side because you're breaststroking at high speed through the fluid of space and kicking these things out around you and behind you, and they'll actually be placed almost where they were before you hit them because the force field comes around and drops and hits a high pressure behind your ship, which pushes you forward. I liken this to the new cowboy in town going into the saloon, and the saloon's packed, I mean really packed, and he has two options. He can just shove the door open like the bad guy in the movies and push people out of the way, and he will meet resistance because people won't like their drinks spilled on them and pushed for him to get into the bar, the saloon. But if he puts his hands on the doors of the saloon and says, "Hey guys, excuse me a second, can you make a hole for me and let me in so I can get to the bar?" No problem, no resistance. He gets in, he gets his drink, and everybody's happy. This is entrainment, where you create a hole for you before you move into an area, and you do it so that nobody is really disturbed too much. And that's this kind of propulsion, more propulsion. See my YouTube videos. As I say, they're short, and they take you on a little trip in my water test tank here at the house. And it shows the different results you can get from a water nozzle on your hose. Certain kinds of nozzles do better than others, but it explains and shows you how that works in water. And that is the very basis of warp propulsion and of the first design I made for a flying saucer that got me recruited into Dr. Keller's program.
Yeah, you've talked about this and actually showed, you had on your show images page in the past, some graphics and diagrams on how scientifically how that would work, and that stuff is pretty fascinating and way above my pay grade and IQ, Stan.
No, it's not. I'll tell you what, if you've ever been out and having to water the lawn, you know, and the plants and stuff, and you got a sandy soil, in fact they work in dirt, but normal dirt, but sandy soil and sandy loam, for instance, and like I did, you're out there and you have to do it. It's your job. You got to water this stuff, and so you're letting the hose kind of drift down toward the plants, and the ground is soaking wet there. And you notice that when you put the nozzle down into this wet sand, whoa, it's the nozzle's not kicking back with thrust anymore. It's being sucked into the dirt and tunneling into the ground. That's simple. But
okay,
Figuring it out why, it's just a matter of drawing it out in pictures in your mind and saying, well, I push into the sand. Why is it pulling me in? Well, you'll find when you put it in the water yourself, you'll see that it forms this curling smoke ring, if you wish, but it's really a curling water ring that looks like a smoke ring. And it sucks you right through the sand. And if it'll do that in sand, it'll do that in space at high speed where there's a lot of small debris traveling at, you know, super relativistic speed to you.
Yeah, I can understand that. And
well,
that's a good picture you painted there.
And you can do this yourself. You can take a bucket of water, for instance, you know, 3 or 4 gallon bucket of water, put it out there, fill it with water, put your hose on, well, spray kind of at about a 45 degree angle spray, hold the hose back about 2 or 3 foot from the nozzle so that it's kicking back. You can feel the thrust of the water coming out like a rocket, and just touch the tip of that nozzle where the spray is to the surface of the water. Just touch it, and it will suck it right out of your hand straight down toward the bottom of the tank of water. Then try it. Come with your hose on full blast, you know, solid core stream coming out of it. Hold it the same way. Push it down against its thrust till it touches just under the water, and zip, right to the bottom it will go. Now, you say, well, yeah, that's because it's hitting the wall of the tank or the little, you know, bucket you've put the water in, and it's curling back up around, and that's what's sucking you in. But what you haven't put together, if you say that, is the last time you were on a boat in the lake or the river traveling at about, I don't know, 20, 25 knots, you put your hand in the water, it's not friendly. It hurts. It'll rip your arm off. It's hard when you move fast against the water. And that means that the water becomes like the wall of a bucket. The faster you hit it with that stream ahead of you, the more it's going to reflect that stream back around you and form this envelope around you that is breaststroking through the water. And that's, when you see that, you'll understand it's not just the bucket, it's the inertia.
Pretty interesting, Stan. We only have about a minute left.
Boy, that went quick.
Before we run out of time, Stan, anything that we didn't get to that you want to touch on, or closing thoughts?
Well, I'm looking at Louisiana on last week's picture I had up there, slide 41, Louisiana shrinking. And it shows the kind of black area of the known, you know, above water parts of Louisiana, but it also shows how much we've lost in the last 100 years with Louisiana sinking, you know, it's being eroded down into the Gulf of Mexico. And I was thinking, well, they're getting another storm and another bunch of water is going to flood. I think you're going to have to change the map of Louisiana again, because they're going to see more erosion there. It's unfortunate, but I do think that they're going to lose more land area. It'd be interesting to read the article and see what I'm talking about. They say that every map of Louisiana is a lie, because the technical boundary runs out into what would almost be international waters, but it's not. It's the state borderline is out underwater. It's kind of spooky when you think about it.
Yeah, it is, and I know that New Orleans already had 4.5 inches of water as of yesterday, and expecting 3 to 4 more inches, and yesterday we saw reports of southwestern Louisiana already getting very high flood waters and reaching into homes waist high in some areas, and it looks like it's only going to get worse with this storm moving through, you know, westward, northeastward, and through Louisiana. But you know, it'll be interesting to watch. Keep these people in the south in your prayers, as the flooding threats are far from over, with the rivers looking to peak in a few days. Stan, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, brother.
You bet, guys.
We appreciate it. You have a good week. You and Holly.
Well, Lord willing, we'll see you next week.
All right.
Bye-bye.
That'll do it for us tonight, folks. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, have a great evening.